Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
White mustache was such a miracle to begin with. Like, maybe we hold on to that. Like, maybe we're not a food business. Maybe we're an advocacy business. Maybe we kind of set an example for how you don't have to, like, get really big and sell to PepsiCo. Maybe you can stay small and flourish.
This week, I get to continue my fascinating conversation with my new best friend, Homa Mashitake, the founder of White Mustache Yogurt. So you get to NYC. You didn't win your battle with the Sacramento people. You didn't move to Oregon, even though it would seem to be the perfect place for you to make your yogurt.
Absolutely.
So you end up in Brooklyn. Then what happened?
We just put our heads down and started working. I made my first batch of yogurt in January of 2013 here in the middle of a blizzard. My whole family had, like, come out.
Well, it's easy because then you could transport it easily and no one would know because it's white on white.
It's nice and cold out, so it's all fine.
Okay.
I mean, there's a real stubborn streak in me. Like, I could have just fallen back on my legal degree. I could have done something else.
Gone back to the avocado farm.
Yeah, I missed avocados and smoking by that point, so it would have been great. But, you know, went to New York, made yogurt. I took it to four stores. I took it to Gastronomy 491 that was on the Upper West Side.
I remember on Columbus Avenue, which is closed now.
Which is closed now. Heartbreaking, but a gem of a store. I felt very civilized there every time I went in, and they took good care of us. But that was the very, very first store in New York City that we ever went to. And then we went to Calustian's, Saxelby's Cheese, and the Brooklyn Larder. The first four stores. And all of them were like, we'd like to take it. When can you have it? And I was like, well, I guess in 2 weeks. And so I stayed in New York and, you know, lived couch to couch on my friends' couches.
You were couch surfing?
And Airbnbs and whatever it took. And just making yogurt and being almost like drunk giddy on this feeling that people wanted it here and that it was finally happening again. Like, what I wanted to happen in California was able and, like, possible here in New York. And I just started making it, delivered it to those four stores. And then we've just been so fortunate because it's just been word of mouth to word of mouth to word of mouth to people finding us. And that summer we went to Smorgasburg and had a yogurt stand. Which was very generous of them to include us, because most people who go to Smorgasburg just want barbecue. Nobody wants a healthy yogurt parfait.
That's true. You know, Smorgasburg was the first artisanal pop-up food market in New York. And now there are Smorgasburgs in L.A. There are many other Smorgasburg-like places all over the city, but they were places that were good incubators for food businesses like yours.
Absolutely. And they provided other things as well, like not only a platform to get the kind of exposure that we got, like even though we weren't, like, you know, selling a lot to a ton of people, people were asking us questions. They were curious. It gave us the kind of, like, platform to understand, okay, what are people asking questions about? What isn't landing or is landing? And we sold the mousseur with the chips, the shallot yogurt with the chips there. And it did kind of do well. And
fascinating.
You know, and that was probably the only place we did well with the savory yogurt. And it also gave us an opportunity to meet other makers. And that's pretty special as well.
And did you know anybody in New York? And were you doing this with your sister, with your dad at that point?
Well, we were making so little and everyone in my family thought I was crazy. So they were like, okay, Homa, you can go and make it. And then I could do it just by myself because we weren't making that much.
Did you know anybody here?
I did. I think I knew Betsy Devine, who made Salvatore Brooklyn Ricotta. It was in her facility that we first made that batch of yogurt. And she shared a space with Nikisha Davis of Early Bird Granola. And they are just two women who were there on the forefront of the whole foodie movement in Brooklyn. And they're so authentic and such badasses. And, you know, I was very fortunate to share space with them for as long as I did. And when I was an attorney, I did practice here in New York City. So in a way, it was coming back home, just in a different income bracket.
Wait, I can't believe you were practicing law again.
No, back when I first graduated.
Oh, I see.
I
thought you'd long ago left the law behind.
I mean, I read like a few leases here and there for a few friends. But then, you know, I was so consumed by my own personal vendetta against California. I was like, I just need to prove a point that I can make, you know, healthy yogurt.
So let's talk about the yogurt itself, which is life-changing. I'm not kidding. I'm not just saying that because you're sitting across from me in special sauce. It's really amazing. Talk about the process. First of all, why is it so different? Why is it so damn creamy and addictive and seriously delicious where other yogurts, I'm going to admit this. I know it's a hard one. I'm not a yogurt person in general, but when Daniel Gritzer, our managing culinary director, told me about it and I had it, I was like, this is it. This is the thing this is what yogurt is supposed to taste like. I love discovering something where you go, oh, this is what an avocado is supposed to taste like. This is what a peach is supposed to taste like. This is what, those moments are the moments I live for, you know, as a serious eater. And that's really what I made my living doing, is telling other people about those moments.
Yeah, well, I feel very grateful that you're including us on that list because, like I said, it almost seemed like an accident that I picked this thing that we always took for granted. But I think the reason it does make you feel that way is because I am capturing this ancient time of my, like, ancestors to make this. Like, there's nothing I'm doing different than the way I would teach you how to do it at home. And you can make white mustache yogurt at home, and it's a very magical process, but it's so, so simple. It's just a matter of boiling the milk, letting the milk cool to a certain temperature, and then very mildly letting it incubate either overnight. And we are now making yogurt in a vat, in a 79-gallon vat, and we just mimic that process. And in that vat is the only time that machinery is ever used. It is entirely handled by human hands after that. We take it out of the vat in 5-gallon batches, and then it goes into 2.5-gallon batches, and then it gets put into an 8-ounce jar where we put the fruit in on the bottom by hand. And, you know, our seasonal flavors of like summer peaches and quince are so much fun to make, and we try to make them as authentically as possible. And, you know, this is where my dad and I are screaming at each other, like, yeah, peel the peaches. No, don't peel the peaches. Leave the skin on.
Is that why he was thrown out of the business?
No, I mean, he's still a part of it, but my dad is the one, like, this old man is the one who's always like, let's try to incorporate more robots and automate this, you know? And he's just like, why are you doing this the old way? You're so backwards. And, you know, he finds me frivolous and like, you know, a lot of these, like, you know, inefficient ways that I'm doing it. And I'm like, but like, daddy, what's the point? Like, what is our end goal? Like, are we really dying to make like hundreds and gallons of yogurt? Or we just want to like have a nice community of people, produce yogurt, like treat our employees well. And like kind of white mustache was such a miracle to begin with. Like maybe we hold on to that. Like maybe we're not a food business. Maybe we're an advocacy business. Maybe we kind of set an example for how you don't have to like get really big and sell to PepsiCo. Maybe you can stay small and flourish and stay small and be legit and stay small and still grow, because there are ways that we're being very ambitious that have nothing to do with automating the way that the way that my dad wants.
So how many employees do you have now?
7.
You're approaching big league serious eats status.
Well,
because we have like 15.
Oh, damn. We're almost there.
but we've been doing it for 12 years. Yeah. But so we have a little more than an employee for every year that we've been in business. I don't know if that's considered scaling or not. So,
I like that gauge, actually.
So it sounds really simple, but why does it taste so different?
What I know of like other commercially made yogurts, and I try not to pay attention, is that they're made in like a split second. They're made in like a matter of a day. And our yogurt takes 3 days to go from milk to jar.
So it's time. Time is the ingredient that you're telling me.
Time. Yep.
So I'm partial to the sour cherry. Mm-hmm. They really only carry at Citarella sour cherry kiss, which is honey walnut and date. Mm-hmm. And then I just add my pecans. Mm-hmm. And then plain. You make plain Persian and plain Greek.
Correct.
Right. See, I know my stuff.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. I'm impressed. And that's kind of all we make. Like, right. We have a seasonal flavor here and there, and then the savory, and then the flesh in the pan of the mint walnut raisin flavor that we call Yalda. Otherwise, that's it. Like, we're, you know.
And what is the difference between Persian style yogurt and Greek yogurt?
Well, this is a very interesting question. So Greek yogurt is known in the market because of, like, they just beat us to the market,
right.
Basically. Absolutely. A lot of cultures strain their yogurt, not just the Greeks, the Armenians, the Iranians. We all strain our yogurt, but now we call it Greek yogurt. So then I was like, well, fine. Our unstrained yogurt's going to be called Persian yogurt. That's the only difference, because, like, is Persian, our Persian yogurt is just the yogurt as it comes straight out of the vat, letting it sit, and then whisked. And then the Greek yogurt is just our strained yogurt, where we remove the whey and make it naturally thicker.
Got it. And now you're selling the whey, right?
We're selling the whey. Because at home, when we had whey, when you make yogurt at home, you'll naturally get a little bit of whey. It settles on the rim of your bowl. And we just drank it because it was really hydrating and nutritious and super light. And now that we're making it, we have a lot more than we can just drink ourselves. And so we've tried to present it as a drink to our customers. And I've made a lot of mistakes with it, actually, because the person who's buying my rich, decadent, creamy yogurt is not the same person who's interested in a light, health, hydrating
right.
drink.
Right.
Also, like, the first time I took it to market, I put it in a big liter bottle and slapped a label on it that said, this is whey, it's delicious. And people were like, what do we do with it? Like, it was just so foreign, and it wasn't to me, so I didn't really do a good job of explaining.
That's all right. A lot of people, you know, fumble brand extensions, you know. So you're not the first. By the way, I can tell you lots of ways that I tried to expand Serious East that didn't work either. Mm. So, and now you're also selling Labneh, right? You're selling?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Labneh is the yogurt cheese. So it's strained for 48 hours, and a lot of the whey gets strained out of that. And it's super thick and spreadable and savory. The plain Labneh, you can go sweet or savory. Like, you could turn it into an icing for a cake. But the savory one is really special, like for a cheese board or something.
You talk about wanting to grow your business, but grow your business in a way that you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which is something that we all struggle with. I struggled with it at Serious Eats, and everyone you talk to struggles with this very same question. So where do you want to take the business? Like, do you want Chobani or Danyan to buy you if they let you do your thing? Or do you think that those are mutually exclusive?
Well, I guess what's the point of them buying me? Like, is it just to be associated with a big brand? Is it to... I think this is where I get stuck with thinking about the future of my business. Like, up until this point, it's really just been my vision of White Mustache. And I listen, like, I feel like I just, like, listen to the yogurt. Like, okay, what do you want to do next?
Whoa, wait, I have to consider that. You listen to the yogurt. Are you saying that you're a yogurt whisperer?
Well, it's alive, right? Like, all those billions of probiotics that come to life. And then, you know, this is what launched the line of the whey drinks. It was like there was all this whey, and it was like, it was saying, help me find a home. And I'm like, okay. Like,
and was the yogurt speaking in Farsi or English?
Well, it depends on what mood it was in. When it was yelling at me, it was in Farsi.
Got it.
It was like, you're wasting me. You got to get on it. Like, that's why the drinks came about, the popsicles came about, because it felt like those were neglected parts of the business.
Yeah.
And so when I think about growing my business, I feel like I've hit a wall. Like, my brain it's tapped out now. Like, how do we grow? And this is where you find interesting partners who inspire you. Like, we were approached by Eataly, who we sell to here in New York.
Uh-huh.
And they opened up a shop in California, in Los Angeles. and they asked if we want to be their exclusive yogurt maker in-house. And I was like, whoa, you can't go back to California. California hates us. Like,
wait, I think I'm banned in California.
Yeah, I'm like, you don't want me there. I kind of pissed off a lot of people. But they made it happen. And now we're making yogurt for one small store. It happens to be like Italy, which is glorious, in LA. And, you know, to me, that was not on my radar. It really was bad timing, too, because we were so busy here with, like, popsicles in the way. But it was an opportunity we couldn't pass up, and that made a lot of sense, and that found us. Just because, like, I feel like if you are so true to the brand and true to the product, like, and you just listen to it. Like, the yogurt was never like, you need to put, like, blueberries in me or, like, you know, really automate this one process or, like, do a shortcut here. Like, as long as we stay true to the process and the timing, I mean, this almost sounds like very California hippie, but I think the right opportunities can find you. And this opportunity in Italy has been just that, because not only do we have a very small store that we can produce for, I also personally feel validated after the whole California, like, experience.
You see, you can go home again.
You can go home again. And it's been a great place to experiment with different things like smoothies and the savory yogurts and the whey drinks, which, you know, the California customer is more receptive to than the New York customer.
So it could be you could end up in all the Italys on the same basis. And did you have to go and train the people in California?
I went myself. Yeah, I went myself. And because I have a huge restaurant community there, you know, we just tapped into that market. And we have, you know, we have two employees, Nate and Orhun, who I personally trained for months to make it. And they're just incredible. They're now part of the White Mustache family. So
that's great. Yeah. I'm going to put on my small business advisory hat.
Yes, please.
Why couldn't you do that in every Whole Foods in America?
I felt paralyzed by that thought because I think of it as like having 50 children, which I would love to have 50 children, but I'm worried I'm going to neglect like number 47, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that's why that thought seems daunting to me. And I know that I don't have to personally micromanage every one of them. And I've gotten really good at like letting go of control, especially because like now I feel like if I take care of like my staff, like the Nate, the Orhuns, the Reinas of the world, they will take care of my product. So I've like my practice is to learn how to train people and to trust them with my product. But there's two things about not doing what you said about being in all the Whole Foods. One is like what does happen at that scale, but also what's the point? You know, like what's the point of me doing that? Why can't somebody else make yogurt? Like somebody in Idaho should be making yogurt for Idahoans.
Got it.
You know.
Plus, you might run out of Zoroastrian communities.
Right. Where's all my family labor?
You know, there is that.
Yeah.
It is such an interesting question because every business that starts in a farmer's market or starts in a smorgasbord has to answer this question, right? Justin's peanut butter cups, which I love, mm-hmm. started in a farmer's market in Boulder, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And just sold for whatever it is, $300 million. That was the direction he decided to go. But you're actually making two points. Number one is you don't know that you could control the process and the product. And number two, you are a genuine believer in local food.
And microeconomies. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's to say I'm more for like the multiple locations, like the White Mustache in New York and the White Mustache in LA, like drawing milk from like up Northern California and drawing milk from the Hudson Valley for our respective shops, as opposed to one spot that has like yogurt for both cities. So I feel like those are two microeconomies that we're supporting. But also back to the first point about the control, I think that is like a personal capacity thing. And I will admit that like, just because I've hit a wall on it doesn't mean that
right.
It's not something that we can't overcome. It's more the latter. Like, what's the real point? What's the end game? What kind of food community do we want to have? What kind of food businesses do we want to have? Do we want to make room for everybody to be a little bit in the market? And, you know, I don't feel like I'm not ambitious by saying that either.
Yeah. I don't think anyone listening to this episode of Special Sauce would say that you lack ambition. I don't know why I say that. So, all right, now it's time for the Special Sauce All You Can Answer buffet. So who's at your last supper, no family allowed, living or dead, could be anybody. Like, you're only limited by the fact that you can't have your family because everyone used to always say my family.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God, I feel awful. I didn't even think about them. I'm like, I see them all the time. Last supper or very last supper?
Yeah.
All right, so last dinner, I would have Mahatma Gandhi.
Okay.
I'd have Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I would have Freddie Mercury. And
first of all, the idea of Freddie Mercury, can I just stop you? Mahatma Gandhi and Ruth Bader Ginsburg is so awesome. I don't even know what to say.
All right. Well, Freddie Mercury was Zoroastrian, just in case, you know, that adds some context.
I should have known that.
Right. Well, I think that's why I would pick him. Yeah, I think those three would. And I love like an awkward dinner, you know? Like, you just have people that might be, like, a little off with each other, and that's, like, going to be very interesting. So I want my last dinner to be, like, slightly on edge, to be like, okay, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. Let's wrap this up.
And then Freddie will serenade you with We Will Rock
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, because otherwise you can't let him up from the table.
No. That's
okay.
Right. He's
right.
Got to do his part.
So what are you eating?
Soup.
Soup.
Soup is my all-time favorite.
What kind of soup?
This morning I had borscht for breakfast. We have...
Because you were hearkening back to your Russian-Jewish ancestors.
Right, exactly. with a dollop of yogurt on top. But, like, it was just... It really hit the spot. But soup to me is just so simple to cook. You can make, like, a huge stock pot of it and have it go... soup is
soup? Soup. All right. So but it has to be a multi-course. It's your last supper. It can't be one thing.
Oh, this is what I'm eating at the last supper, not right now.
Yeah, so soup is one thing.
Yeah. Oh, at the last supper.
Yeah.
No, I would have, I would have Persian rice with the tadik, which is the crusty thing on the rice crust, crispy rice.
Right.
And I would have musir, which is the shallot yogurt with that. I would have gourmet sabzi. Which is a green herb stew, and I would have, this is at random, but Indian chaat with like yogurt drizzled on top and tamarind sauce and chutney. And then for dessert, I would have tiramisu.
Tiramisu,
yeah.
That famous Zoroastrian dish, the national dish of Zoroastria.
I just love that decadent, creamy taste of anything. So,
that's hilarious.
Yeah. So my people can adapt.
So what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat?
Toast.
Yeah. Avocado toast? Like or whatever's
just
around.
Like very British butter jam toast.
Got
with
it.
Some tea and call it a meal.
I love that. And what's always in your fridge?
Yogurt.
Besides,
I guess yogurt's I mean, that's too obvious an answer.
Right.
Butter.
Basically dairy products.
Yeah.
That's what we find. That's what we find in your fridge.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. Do you have a guilty pleasure?
Yes. And I'm very ashamed to admit this, but not very ashamed because, like, you know, if I got a box of it, I would be so thrilled. Is those, like, totally commercial little Hostess cherry pies that come in the prepackages. Like, whenever I'm having a bad day, I need one of those. It makes me so happy.
And does it have to be Hostess or any brand will
any
do?
Any brand. I
Little
mean, at that point. Like, yeah, at that point.
At that point, you're not brand specific.
No, you just want that trash in your mouth. It's so great. It's so nostalgic. And
I have a lot of those, too. You know, like, I have to say that I'm a huge peanut butter cup fan.
Mm-hmm.
And although I would like them to be dark chocolate, sometimes it doesn't even matter. And it's the same thing where it's like, what do you reach for? Like, I had a 3-hour journey in an Uber from our office in Sunset Park last night in the middle of the snowstorm.
Oh, my gosh.
And he gave me some Swedish fish. It was the best thing I've ever tasted in my life. Because context is everything.
Everything. Everything.
So what's on your nightstand now, book-wise?
I haven't read a book in a long time with the baby and work and everything.
Got it.
But
before the baby, what was the last book you read?
It was Sick by Puruchista Khakpur. It's this woman who had Lyme disease and talks about what it's like to be sick in America as a woman and a woman of color. And it's such a fascinating read because her story is so devastating, and yet somehow you feel light after it.
Wow.
And
Sick, S-I-C-K?
S-I-C-K, yeah.
All right, I'm going to read it.
It's amazing.
Who's had the greatest influence on you in your career? Probably not your dad.
No, because I disagree with him all the time. Yeah. Betsy Devine of Salvatore Brooklyn Ricotta just felt like such a beacon at such a dark time.
Yeah.
And I respect so much about her and just her attitude in general. And she's extremely pleasant human being. And I'm very honored to have shared space with her at such a time when we were first getting off the ground.
Tell us about the baby.
Oh.
First of all, oof. I can't believe you haven't shown me any pictures.
You know, I'm so bad. I got pregnant and had a baby and didn't tell anybody. Like, it was just like, I was not processing the information.
You told I presume you told the father.
Yeah, he knew. Yeah, but it didn't even sink in for him until he saw her. I was like, dude, you need to change some of your priorities. He's like, yeah, later, maybe. So we're both pretty like chill, a little too much. But she's great. Her name is Zomorod, and it means emeralds in Farsi. And my parents were like, why are you giving her such an intense ancient Iranian name? It's like naming your child Gertrude, I guess, in English. And they're like, why? And I was like, look, my kid is going to be like, she's got an Italian last name, she's gonna be very American. I just want her to have something that reminds her daily that she's like Iranian.
Wow.
And they're like, yeah, you did it. So but she's so precious, and like I said, in a way, like, she's kind of slowed me down a lot, like work-wise and life-wise, and it's been a real blessing, I think.
And is she 6 months now?
She's 4 months.
4 months. Does Zomorod eat yogurt?
Zomorod's first food, I was like, oh, it's going to be yogurt, because it has to be. But we were in a situation where we had just harvested a whole bunch of pomegranates from our yard in California a month ago, and her first food was actually pomegranate juice. And I just like squeezed a few seeds into a spoon and gave her the juice of that. So that was her first
nice food. See, I thought you were gonna say a Hostess cherry pie.
I know. She wasn't ready.
All right. So it's just been declared Homodashtaki Day all over the world. What's happening on that day?
Well, everyone gets a Hostess cherry pie.
An excellent start to the day.
There's definitely a parade. You know, I don't remember where I read this, but there's this one thought that, like, tax day should be a really special day. Like, we should live in a society that when it's the day to pay your taxes, we should all rejoice and be like, yay, we're going to contribute to schools, and we're going to contribute to hospitals, and we're going to contribute to roads. Like, everyone would be really proud of tax day. And I think if it's like, you know, Homodashtaki Day, I would like everyone to be really excited to go to work. Because I value work so much. And the thought of, like, someone not being super excited to go and either, like, do their craft or hate their craft but love their colleagues.
Right.
It's just, like, everyone's really happy to go to work day.
I love that.
That's
that. Thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Homodashtaki. It's been an honor. Really, an honor and a pleasure to have you with us. By all means, make it your business, Serious Eaters, to seek out White Mustache Yogurt, even though Homa's making it hard to find. When you do find it, it's worth every penny and more. And please start making peach and savory shallot yogurt again soon. I guess peach, we're going to have to wait for the summer, right, Homa?
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you again. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Ed.
So long, Serious Eaters. We'll see you next time.